And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Well, this is weird. Steve not here. Steve is traveling back from New York where he visited his mom for her birthday. I am Alex Braga sitting in for Steve along with Rick Nodgers. Nick Rodgers. Across the
Please call me Rick.
Across the way from me. Oh, we're just going by Rick now? Okay.
Yeah, why not?
Fair enough. Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline is open if you would like to call us. I don't know why you would, but hey, it's free country. 284-8571. No text line today, but you can use Twitter at 95.3 The Score. You can hit up Nick at Rick Nodgers on Twitter if you would like. We'll read the stuff on the air. Why not? So, again, it's kind of weird. We're, you know, Steve, we figured, out of town, the East Coast, kind of visiting family and saying what's up to everybody out there. We figured, you know, we got this opportunity here to host a show for kind of a shortened show with Oregon basketball later tonight, and so we figured, what the heck, take advantage of it. Bottom of this hour, we will have the Richter scale at around 4:20. We will have Light 'em Up, usual Monday segments. Then we will end early today around 4:30, actually giving way to the IMG Coaches Show with Willie Taggart. Then immediately after that, will give way to the Oregon and Prairie View A&M game. Tips off at 6 with a 5:30 pregame show start right here on The Score. So Nick and I will be with you for the next hour and a half. So strap in. Could be awful. Nick keeps... I mean, so last night on Twitter...
Set the bar low, huh?
Last night on Twitter, Nick very optimistic talking about how it could be great and stuff. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I know us.
I didn't say it was going to be great. I just said, like, listen, maybe, if you want to.
I don't recommend it, though. That's what I was saying. So again, also on the show today at around 3:30, I'm going to chat with Eric Scopel of 24/7 Sports and Duck Territory. He covers Oregon football and basketball, has a heavy focus on recruiting, which I know a lot of you out there are interested in Oregon recruiting. So I figure with Steve away, we'll steal some of Eric's time to talk about some stuff Steve is less than jazzed in talking about. So that's coming up at 3:30. Eric Scopel is going to join us. Big weekend in sports, and you know we'll get into basketball in a bit, but there haven't been many, you know, bigger weekends in college football than this last weekend. I think it was 6 top 25 matchups, a few surprising blowouts, I think, you know, a few absolute duds, games that were over very early and people stopped watching. It actually made it kind of convenient because, you know, the problem with having that many really good college football games on at the same time is you can't watch them all at the same time. And it made it really easy that Ohio State was blowing out Michigan State very early and you had no interest in watching that game anymore. It made it very easy that Georgia got right. run out of the stadium by Auburn really early.
There was one good game per time period of kickoff. Like in the morning games, it was a little rough until about 10:30, 11, and that's when you realized, okay, Oklahoma State, Iowa State's going to be the game to watch. The afternoon games, I didn't end up watching because I was watching my World All-Stars take on the Globetrotters.
We'll talk about that later, too.
And then the 5 o'clock kickoffs, like the U-Miami game was the big one. That was over early, and it was like, I don't want to watch the rest. I stopped watching in the second quarter, and I was just like, okay, the Bama-Mississippi State game, that's the close one.
Now,
I'll watch that.
I'll say, though, I absolutely loved every second of that Miami and Notre Dame game. I don't care that it was a blowout.
Did you watch all of it?
That's the one I didn't care that it was a blowout, because that team is legitimately fun to watch, and it's always nice watching Notre Dame lose. I think most people will agree on that. that. If
I don't think I hate Notre Dame as much as other people do.
I think if you're not a Notre Dame fan, watching Notre Dame lose is just, it's like a national pastime. Like, you'll get, hey, kids, gather around. Let's all sit down on the couch and watch Notre Dame lose a football game. Oh, this is what it's like, Dad. This is fantastic. Yeah, that's right, son.
But, is this what Grandpa did, too?
Miami's a legitimately fun team to watch. I mean, they are. So, you know, a lot of people talk around in this area, and I don't know, Willie Taggart kind of came in with, you know, his whole, you know, he wants to bring the swag to this Oregon team. He wants them to feel the juice. He wants them to have all that energy. And he wants the sidelines to get involved. He wants the fans to do it. Miami is what swag looks like.
Without a doubt.
The turnover chain on the sideline.
That is fantastic.
The energy on the field. That's what fun college football is supposed to be, is the Miami Hurricanes. And so they're legitimately fun to watch again, which is nice. I mean, again, we talk about like the history of college football, and we talk about, you know, making fun of Notre Dame, obviously, which is one of those things for me. But, you know, Miami being good makes college football better. They're just a fantastic team to watch, and their defense is elite. And I think that's kind of surprising a lot of people, is just how good they are and kind of what they did to a Notre Dame team. And, you know, they're not slouches. I mean, Notre Dame's a good team. And so, you know, I think what Miami did to Notre Dame on Saturday kind of opened a lot of eyes that they are actually a legit team, because I know Steve talks about this all the time, because, you know, Miami and Wisconsin, who is also undefeated, kind of being on the outside looking in when they're undefeated Power 5 teams. I think this win, and it, you know, it showed in the polls, shows that Miami is really, you know, one of those legit teams that has to be reckoned with until they lose, which is obviously still possible because they are Miami in the end. But, you know, top 25 out for the coaches in the AP polls now, today, I think they came out. Alabama's still number one. Miami's number two. And, you know, I was planning on talking about this anyways, but I legitimately feel like Miami, after that win over Notre Dame, deserves to be number one. And, you know, it sounds weird to say because of Alabama and, you know, all the history that Alabama has, but you can't really take into account the past when you're talking about college football seasons, especially with college sports. You can't bring the past into it, because they have different teams every single year. Sometimes they have different coaches, like Miami does, and so it's a completely different situation, and you really have to look at it like that. I know it's like that's kind of the thing when we switch away from BCS, which is, you know, all computer generated, it takes all the formulas into account, and then you go back to humans, it brings the human element back into it. And that's kind of the problem with that, is that human beings take in what Alabama did last year. They take in what Nick Saban has done. They take in Nick Saban. The BCS didn't take into account Nick Saban. But the pollsters do, and so they look at all this past stuff, and they're like, well, Alabama's still Alabama. Alabama should be number one because they're Alabama.
Which makes sense, though.
On paper it does, but then you look into this, and, you know, Alabama has a couple of nice wins this year, but I don't think any win is better than what Miami just did. What Miami just did to Notre Dame, they took apart a very good Notre Dame team. And I know we don't like to say that and acknowledge that Notre Dame is actually a good team, but they are.
Yeah.
They're a really good team, and Miami just took them apart. Offensively, defensively, it wasn't even a contest. And so if you have that, if you have a team that is undefeated in a Power 5 conference and just dismantled Notre Dame, why shouldn't they be number one?
Because Nick Saban,
exactly.
I don't. Alabama or pardon, Notre Dame. Miami. Let's try and talk. Rick.
Miami.
The most points Miami has given up was 30 to Toledo, when Miami also scored their season high of 52.
Right,
and then they gave up 8 to Notre Dame. They've held everybody else under 25.
First FBS team in a decade and a half to force 4 turnovers against Power 5 opponents in 4 straight games.
Wow.
That is Miami. So,
everybody go get a turnover chain.
I know. I don't know what Mark Richt has done with that program, but whatever it is, they are legit right now. And look, you know, so say Miami does, So say the playoff rankings come out and Miami is number one. That doesn't mean, you know, they're going to end up number one. I mean, they could still very well lose in the end because, you know, it's college football and teams lose. It is what it is. But you have to take into account what has happened on the field. And the fact that, and it's not like we're talking about a D2 school. We're talking about a team in a legitimate conference that has won all of their games. I don't really understand the argument. And that goes for Wisconsin too. I mean, Wisconsin is undefeated right now. They've won 10 games. Like, what more do you want from a college football team than to win all of their games? So, you know,
win all of their games against Alabama, like they just schedule Alabama 10 straight weeks and beat them.
So everybody brings their "We want Bama" signs to every single game, and then they just hope it happens in the end.
Hey, one of these days, one of the teams that is like the "We want Bama" chant, that is cursed forever. Everybody who brings it up, ironically, unironically, they lose. They get their butts handed to them the week before they face Alabama, and then they get their butts handed to them again by Alabama.
I swear, Billy Bob, one of these days, Bama's actually going to show up. You're going to regret it, I'm telling you. But by the way, so Wisconsin, they are an FBS team, and they haven't lost a game. I'm never going to say beating Iowa is impressive. Like, that's never going to enter the lexicon ever. But it doesn't matter. You can't call your stupid poll legit if you have an undefeated FBS team that isn't in the top four ahead of one-loss teams. They're still fifth in the AP poll right now. They're out on the outside looking in, and they're undefeated. I don't know what you have to do other than win all of your games. And they've done that, and they're still not in. It kind of boggles my mind. I'll never understand it, but I guess, you know, it is what it is. And you better believe that if they finish the season undefeated, that they're going to be in. I mean, it's just, it's kind of a waiting game, but still, it just, you know, look at what's on the paper. I mean, obviously paper doesn't tell the whole story, but look at what's on the paper. That's a whole bunch of wins and zero losses. I mean,
but they're ugly wins. They beat Purdue 17-9.
But they're wins.
I know, but they beat a bad Purdue team barely. They scraped by against Purdue.
It's funny. We talk about like good and bad losses, and now we're talking about bad wins. But they're wins.
But like, if you're a good team, you should score more than 17 on Purdue. You should beat Purdue by more than six.
Sure. So are we saying they're not a good team?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Wisconsin. Like, they're just kind of there. Like, but if they go undefeated, yes, they absolutely deserve to go in because they won the Big Ten. Even if they only beat one, maybe two good teams. I mean, a top 25 win of Iowa, it'd be a top 20 win over Michigan. Like, I don't they would play Penn State, I think, or Ohio State has I don't know who's in the legends or the leaders, like who's leading over there, but like the other team they're going to face, like that's going to be their hardest game of the season, and they're going to have like less than a week to prepare for it.
So by the way, the Wisconsin and Iowa game, I'm not sure either. I can't answer your question because I didn't watch all of that game, because why would you? Because it's Wisconsin and Iowa. But my point remains, I mean, they're 10-0 right now.
It's Ohio State in the East that would possibly be, unless
Ohio State has two losses.
Right. So it's not like Ohio State, if they win the Big Ten championship, like they're going to get in with two losses. Because, I mean, they could probably easily, Urban Meyer could blow the big game over Michigan or whatever, and maybe Harbaugh continues to lose to Ohio State as he's done the entire time he's been there.
Right.
So the Big Ten is just wonky. Like, you've got too many teams with, I mean, the entire East, everybody's got at least two losses.
Yes.
Which is not very good. So
it is a big mess behind Ohio State in that division, certainly. So, it looks like it's going to be Ohio State. But then again, if they lose to Michigan, then you have a huge mess in that conference, because then you'll have a whole bunch of two-loss teams and you'll have a whole bunch of tiebreakers to take into account. And they all kind of even each other out. So then hopefully you could just go by overall record. But yeah, you never know the season's going to end up.
We need one of those like circles of suck or whatever, where it's like so-and-so. Team A beat Team B, who beat Team C, who beat Team D, and just work it all the way around and just figure out who actually the best team in the conference is.
By the way, I think that's a really good way to just rank teams from here on out. The circle of suck.
Yeah, Reddit College Football has one that they made for like the Pac-12. It's like everybody's beaten everybody, and then in the middle there's just a sad beaver because Oregon State just can't get a win.
You know, like, I like Oklahoma. They're 9-1, but Stoops used to coach there, and I really just don't like his face. And so, no, that's a no for me. I'm sorry. Oklahoma's going to be a no for me. Wouldn't that be great?
He's not even the coach.
He's not even the coach.
I don't like Stoops' face.
I know what you're saying. I know. I'm sorry.
Visors in Oklahoma in the wintertime, it doesn't make sense. It's not sunny. Wear them at practice.
By the way, Oklahoma did beat TCU 38-20. Sooners, I mean, they looked really good. Led 38-14 at the half, kind of took the air out of the ball after that. Baker Mayfield, 18 of 27, 333 yards and 4 scores. Definitely strengthened his Heisman campaign. I mean, he just seems like one of those different cats, you know? I think it was Jersey Jack who called into Steve last week, said he has moxie. And, you know, whatever it is, I really think Baker Mayfield has it. You know, in terms of the NFL, I think he's, you know, going to have those question marks because he had all that off the field stuff. I think he got a DUI, right? Or was it the public intoxication?
Public intoxication.
And he, like, ran away from a cop.
Yeah, he was trying to, like, do that. Talk to a cop about something and then, like, walked away and then started to run away and got tackled. Like, that's not a good look.
So it was like the slow walk, which built to a run.
Yeah, I think he was, like, told to stay and then, like, walked away and then was being chased. He's like, nope, I'm gonna run.
Yeah, you know what cops don't like? When you run from them. They really don't.
Also,
like that.
Also, shout out the officer that caught Baker Mayfield.
Hey. Because
defenses don't do that in the Big 12.
They're really not good at it. Well, he also has people blocking for him. That helps. In terms of the NFL, I'm not sure he'd be, you know, trustworthy, but, you know, talent wise, I know Rick Neuheisel. I think Rick Neuheisel was on DP and he said that he would take him over any of the other quarterbacks. I don't know about that, but he'd be one or he'd probably
in
be
college
two
football or NFL,
NFL. He'd probably be two Ooh. Or three. Maybe I really like Rudolph from Oklahoma State. I love the way he moves in the pocket. I mean, he's a pocket passer. I love the way he moves in the pocket, and he has just a humongous arm. So,
I would think Darnold still has, like, all of those qualities you would want in a quarterback, just the arm and the reading the play and all that stuff. Like, it kind of sucks that it doesn't suck that USC is, like, not in the picture because that's just fun to watch USC lose as well. But
be overrated in the preseason.
Yeah, I think you would still want Darnold. I think Rosen, like, at times, like, I've watched the UCLA game against Oregon and he was good in that one, but that game against Memphis, like, early in the season, there were times where he looked like a surefire number one pick, and then there were times where it didn't look like he could even start in college. Like, he shouldn't be a starter, and that kind of, like, flux has thrown me off. But I really like Baker Mayfield. I think he's got, like, that Johnny Football vibe where he can just kind of run all over the place and he loves football,
but actually has size and arm talent.
But he's got the size and the ability that's, like, a step above Johnny Football that makes him, like, even better. And I think he's going to be a really good NFL quarterback someday.
I think I tend to agree with you on that. I don't know that I would, you know. And by the way, the 49ers are going to have a really high pick in the draft, so this might be something I actually have to think about very soon. But obviously, they just got Garoppolo, so we'll see if, you know, they do
if
the
they
franchise,
even,
franchise tag on him
what they,
or whatever.
They're going to ruin whatever they do with Garoppolo. They're going to make the wrong decision.
Just get him a left tackle in the draft or something. I don't know. I am depressed. Now we talk about the Niners. Why do we bring up the Niners?
You did it.
I know.
It wasn't
me. Right. By the way, so back to the Georgia game, because I kind of want to talk about that because they were the number one. And we talked about how, you know, it's kind of weird living in a world where Georgia is actually the number one team in college football. And oddly enough, the year after Mark Richt is gone, they're undefeated and number one. And then Mark Richt, what he does at Miami, I guess it's 2 years after. But still, they got absolutely taken to the woodshed by Auburn, 40-17. It was kind of close at the half, but the Tigers came out at halftime like gangbusters. I have no idea what they were doing at halftime. If, you know, they got, I don't know, put something special in the Gatorade or something, but they came out like Superman. Bulldogs never really had a shot. And by the way, this does absolutely nothing to take away from Georgia's title chances, by the way. I mean, it's a big loss and they look really bad, but they still have a two-game lead in the SEC East over South Carolina, will still play Alabama or Auburn in the SEC East title game.
They've clinched their spot in the title
game. Yeah, so, well, I mean, with they have a legit shot to still end up in the top two in the country. I mean, the polls, you know, as they tend to do, and, you know, they don't really matter because they're polls, but they clearly overreacted with this one by, you know, dropping Georgia to 7 and bumping Auburn up to 6. I kind of get the sense it was like, you know, you can't have Georgia behind or in front of Auburn after they just beat them like that, even though there's Auburn has 2 losses. But Auburn ends up, you know, losing the Iron Bowl to Alabama, and Georgia's, you know, right back in it, and or Auburn's right back down. And I don't see any way Georgia isn't at least top 4 if they win out, especially if we're talking about them beating Alabama. Forget it. Which, you know. So, you know, big win for Auburn, of course. I mean, their only losses this year to actually really good losses, if we're talking about good losses, LSU and Clemson. So I imagine if they went out as well, we're discussing maybe a 2-loss SEC team being in that Final Four, then it could, you know, it could very well be Auburn. I don't see how you could leave them out with that resume, because, again, that would include a win in the Iron Bowl over Alabama and then a win over Georgia in the SEC title game. So you'd have to be in.
There's so much that can happen in the last, like, 3 weeks of the season. It's unreal. But is it opening the door more towards multiple 2-loss conference champions getting in or 2 teams from the same conference? Because if Alabama's only loss is to Georgia in the SEC championship game, that's a really good loss. And I could see them ending up 4th, and then you just bump Wisconsin out maybe if they're undefeated or they only have 1 loss.
Bump
like,
them out.
I don't know. Like, I think that
way Wisconsin's being looked at right now, they would be out with 1 loss.
Well, yeah,
that's
sure.
The thing. They're out right now, and they're 10-0.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It is really going to be a crazy final couple of weeks of college football because a lot is still on the line here. All right, we'll get to more of that coming up in a bit. On the other side of this break, I'm going to be joined by Eric Scopel from 24/7 Sports Duck Territory. He covers a lot that has to do with Oregon sports. He covers basketball, football. Also, of course, with being with 24/7 Sports has a focus on recruiting. And so we're going to ask him some football recruiting and basketball recruiting questions as well. Alex and Nick sitting in for Steve, who is making his way back from New York. Thanks for joining us today. 284-8571 if you want to get in a call. But obviously, we're about to have a guest, so maybe don't do that. We'll be right back.
Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters, family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
No huddle, Goff back to pass from his end zone, straight down the middle of the field. He's got a man wide open. Robert Woods catches it at the 45. No one will catch him. Robert Woods with a 94-yard touchdown from Jared Goff.
That was Kevin Lee and Brady Popinga on the Westwood One Radio Network. The Rams, another win, another impressive win over the Texans, 33-7. I don't understand what is happening in this world when the Rams are good and Miami and Wisconsin are undefeated, but I'm not sure that I'm happy about it. obviously, I'm a Niners fan, and so it'd be nice if the Rams weren't great. You know, I kind of gave up on the Niners a while ago because they have not been good at all this year until this week, baby!
Please don't get excited about beating the Giants. Although, if you want to gloat, please do it while Steve is in an airplane.
I was going to say, it's actually good Steve's not here because we might have, like, suicide watch on the Ferry Street Bridge or something. I mean, losing to the 49ers is a bad loss. There's no way around that.
Do you think maybe there's a small chance he was just so sad he just missed his flight?
He doesn't get here until Thursday.
Just talking to Steve, you have to get up and get your... I don't want to.
I don't
want to
go. I'm just so sad. There's no real way around. And it's weird because I think I saw today that the Giants they're actually not talking about firing McAdoo, which just seems crazy because, you know, the Giants are just so bad this year. And we're seeing stories regularly that, you know, McAdoo, like the players have quit on Ben McAdoo. And so I don't know. I know he's new with the team and everything like that, but if you have a coach that the players have quit on, you can either, you know, get rid of the players or get rid of the coach, and you can't get rid of all of the players. And so you would think that, you know, McAdoo would kind of be the guy to fall on the sword there. But that is apparently not going to be the case with the Giants moving forward. So
dreaded vote of confidence.
Yeah, kind of going to be a weird situation there. So, all right, let's get to it. You can find his work on Duck Territory, Oregon.247sports.com, or you can find him on Twitter, where he uses all of the 280 characters now allowed, at Eric with a K, underscore Scopel, also with a K. Covers Oregon recruiting of all kinds, Oregon football, Oregon basketball, and more. Eric Scopel, thanks for joining us. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Fantastic, man. Trying to survive out here. hey, Eric, when is Justin Herbert going to play?
Well, it could be this Saturday, but we don't know anything more, I guess, right now than we did this morning when Willie Tiger spoke with the media. I think a lot of us thought he might disclose that in fact, Herbert would be returning on Saturday against Arizona, but he said that decision will not be determined until 3:59 p.m. Saturday, and guess what? That game kicks off at 4.
Yeah, 4 o'clock kick. It's kind of, are you as surprised as me? I mean, I'm out there practices with you too, and we kind of saw him the last few weeks kind of building up, you know, the physicality with which he was practicing with. And last week, I mean, obviously you're playing against Washington, so you don't want to kind of throw him out there to the wolves, but last week he looked physically ready. Are you as surprised as me that it kind of took this long?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I know you kind of have to protect your investment in this situation.
Sure.
You know, Tegert's referred to him as a franchise. You don't want to, you know, risk re-injury and then he's done for the year and maybe misses, you know, time through. You know, I mean, if he actually breaks it, I think it was a fracture. If he breaks it, maybe he's not back until May or June. So you do have to be kind of cautious there. He might miss spring football camp this upcoming year. But, yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. You know, I think from what we saw in practice, he throws a great football. I mean, it was interesting watching him compared to what we've seen for the past couple of weeks from Braxton Burmeister, just, you know, throwing 60-yard bombs on the money. So, yeah, a little bit surprised, and honestly, you know, a little surprised that if Herbert is as close as we think he is to playing, that he didn't declare such today at his media press conference.
Yeah, I think we learned that you can't play doctor with the eyeball test. We'd be really bad doctors. It's funny, I remember after Herbert got injured, you know, people kind of looked at the Arizona game and the Civil War as sort of the get back on track games, you know, where the Ducks could kind of fix everything, get bowl eligible, and then kind of move on from there. But then Khalil Tate shows up, and Arizona is 7-3. What did Coach Taggart say today about stopping him, and what do you think their chances are against the Cats?
Well, he was asked about what kind of the best bet in terms of preparing for it was, and he said prayer. So, and that's not, that, I mean, and obviously that was said kind of offhand and kind of as a joke, but, you know, I think he has been so incredibly dynamic in the six games he started. I think he has like 650 yards rushing just on touchdown runs, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
He's had like a long 50 to 70 yard touchdown in every game this season during that stretch. And, I think he's a guy where if Oregon is able to eliminate those long 50, 70, 80, 90-yard touchdown runs, and he's had one in kind of all those categories already this season, that maybe they have a shot, because a lot of his yards come in kind of that big play category. And if Oregon is able to keep it to 20 yards at a maximum in terms of the rushing output on one play, they'll have a shot. Now, with that said, Arizona's played some pretty good defenses, and no one's been able to slow him down yet.
Yeah, it kind of seems like the second half of the season's Bryce Love, you know, where as he was kind of missed the first half, and then he shows up and does what he's doing now. We're here with Eric Scopel of Duck Territory. Let's get to some recruiting. Oregon currently sixth in the nation for football overall with 13 4-stars, no 5-stars, but still, to be ranked that high, do you think it's something that's sustainable here? I mean, you think sixth overall, then you see a 5-5 team. It kind of doesn't make sense on paper. But is the Taggart factor good enough to actually make Oregon a top recruiting team as long as he's around?
I believe so. You know, up until Sunday, they actually had a 5-star commitment in the 2019 class. And that player, R.J. Henderson, actually decommitted on Sunday. So maybe you're starting to see a little bit of that wavering in terms of confidence with the program. But I think, you know, maybe they're not going to always be top 10, but I think with kind of the level of enthusiasm and confidence and swagger that they bring to it, I think it's not unreasonable to expect them to be in that 12 to 13 range and above every year, which is kind of uncharted territory for Oregon recruiting. I think their best class ever was 12 in 2000, and I think it was 9.
Yeah.
So, you know, the history says that this is kind of uncharted territory, but I wouldn't be surprised. You look at kind of the guys that they're bringing in this year's class, and they're, you know, it's a consistent group of guys that are wanted by a lot of really big-time football programs. And I don't think that that's going to change. I just think that the mentality that they bring to it is so foreign to what Oregon has dealt with in the past. And you're kind of seeing, I know it's 4 or 5 years removed from the height of Oregon's success in the field, but you're kind of starting to see what it's like to recruit, you know, like a top 10 program should.
You know, I've been wondering about this for a while. We always heard Oregon was impossible to recruit to. I think Chip Kelly basically like hammered that into all of our heads for years. Then he left and Mark Helfrich kind of proved his point. But, you know, Dana Altman is getting big time players to come here. Now Taggart. Do you buy any of that Oregon is still really hard to recruit to?
I think if you have the wrong mindset going in, like it sounds like maybe Kelly and Helfrich had, it probably is, because you kind of create a barrier that's impossible to breach. But what Taggart and his staff has done, I don't believe that's the case. And basketball is kind of it's a different sport animal, just because you're dealing with AAU basketball. These guys are out on the road, you know, traveling year round. You know, it's summer. Basically, they live on airplanes, they live in hotels, and so it's not unusual for them to be moving all the way across the country like they would for a basketball team. But with football, yeah, I think, you know, you're seeing it with Taggart. I mean, they're going across the country to pull in these guys. I mean, they've got part of that is just because of the way he constructed his staff. A lot of guys from the Southeast, some guys from Texas, guys who have expertise in California. And they're all really enthusiastic recruiters and are very, very active. I mean, you talk to a number of the top targets Oregon's got on their board, and they all say that they're getting, you know, 4 or 5 tweets, texts, what have you, a day from the staff, which, you know, I know that I'd heard rumors with the previous staff that it was, you know, a situation where maybe they'd get a text every couple of weeks. I mean, this group is just so much more active.
Here with Eric Scopel from Duck Territory. All right, on to hoops. You know, the Ducks just signed two big players, Miles Norris and Lewis King. Lost out on R.J. Barrett, who apparently chose Duke over Oregon. Nice company to be in. but Manute Bol's son, Bol Bol, is the third-ranked player in the nation, according to your guys' rankings, has Oregon as a finalist. What are you hearing on him, and, you know, what would he do to Oregon's class for basketball?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Bol Bol, son of Manute, 7'3", incredibly talented. Down to Oregon and Kentucky. You mentioned a second ago Duke being good company to be in, and Kentucky's right there with Duke in terms of the blue bloods and
on the recruiting
course. Two schools right now, the Crystal Ball, which is 24/7 kind of prognosticating service, which experts kind of put in, hey, we think X player is going to X school. Oregon has a very, very high percentage of those. I think it's in the 90s right now in terms of people projecting. The worrisome part here in terms of when is this going to happen? Signing day runs from November 8th through the 15th, so we're right in the middle of it, and yet kind of no word from Bol on kind of when he's committing, if he's going to commit and sign during this period. And if he doesn't sign in the next 3 days, he won't be able to sign again until the spring signing period. And at that point, you start going, if he's so sold on Oregon,
yeah, why
is he stretching it out? So there is probably a certain level of concern just in terms of when he does it. But with that said, he still has, you know, a nice little window here. If he, you know, most people think if he is going to sign right now, it would be with Oregon. And, you know, you mentioned, kind of asked what the impact of that would be. It would be huge. He would be the best recruit they'd ever signed. He's a guy that is an instant impact player. He's a probable top 2 or 3 pick in an NBA draft when he does come out. 7'3", can shoot the 3, can dribble the basketball. You can watch his highlights on YouTube in there. Kind of unlike anything you've ever seen. He's maybe a little bit like a Kristaps Porzingis, just in the versatility. You know, 7'3", 7'4", can shoot it, can dribble, can defend a lot of different positions. So, huge talent. A guy that Oregon just a couple of years ago would have had no shot of landing. But, you know, the recent success and kind of the inroads they've had with other big-time recruits has kind of put them in a spot where they're one of the favorites. And it's also worth mentioning the FBI investigation eliminated two of his other top schools, which were Arizona and USC.
Interesting.
And those are schools that were probably considered favorites for him. And you do wonder if maybe he's kind of slowing things down right now and going to wait until the FBI, this is mostly speculative, but wait until the FBI makes some determination on some things with Arizona and USC. And obviously they've arrested the coach from each school, but maybe there's a possibility that things don't look quite as bad in 4 months and he kind of circles back around and picks one of those schools.
Does he sound like he could be a one-and-done type of player?
Yes. I think absolutely. You just kind of look at, you know, and he is a guy that probably isn't quite as polished as R.J. Barrett, who Oregon, you just mentioned, was a finalist for.
Yeah.
But he's 7'3". He's got a wingspan of close to 8 feet. He can shoot from three. He can do all these things. He just looks, you look at him and you go, that guy can play in the NBA and do it sooner rather than later.
The Ducks in action tonight against Prairie View A&M, that opener against Coppin State. It seemed disjointed, I think is a good word for it. A great first half, not a great second half. Obviously, a lot of new faces on the floor. What kind of things did Coach Altman say about that game? Seemed like a lot to improve on for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and one, I think the big takeaway for me was two things. First off, they did not defend well at all in the second half. First half, I think they held Coppin State to like 4-for-28 shooting, and you're going, this team might not score 30 points tonight. But in that second half, they got kind of lazy. They allowed 40 points, and Altman said basically you have 13 guys on a roster, and all of them think their first option is to score. And he needs a couple of those guys to commit to the defensive end, and I think you'll start to see that. I mean, this is certainly, you know, really, really, really early on in the season, so you don't want to have too much of a knee-jerk reaction, but you understand that the inclination there with a lot of these newcomers, and there are a ton on this team, is to get as many shots up as possible. And you saw that at times on the previous game where it was just like, that's not a high-quality shot. There goes the ball. So, yeah, I think you'll see that kind of correct itself, you know, over time. And then the other thing was the three-point shooting, which, you know, Altman had actually said after the first two exhibition games was better this year than it has been in the past, and they might actually shoot it more. And yet they go out there in their first game, and I think they shot it at like a 30% clip, which has to be better if you're going to lean on that shot as much as it looks like they're going to. So, you know, I think those are two things to kind of keep an eye on tonight against Prairie View. You know, how do they shoot the ball from three? Is it better? Are they taking better ones? Are they taking less? Are they taking more? And then how do they defend over 40 minutes? Like I said, they defended really well in the first half against Coppin State, and then far too many easy buckets after that.
Kind of reminiscent of last year when Coach Altman talked about that with their non-conference schedule, how they needed to improve defensively, and then sure enough, Jordan Bell and Chris Boucher improved defensively.
Right.
Last question here for Eric Scopel of Duck Territory. Now, we actually all seem to forget the growing pains Oregon went through last non-conference. It took them a while to mesh and become, you know, the Final Four team that they ended up. If you had a hunch, I mean, you know, the grad transfers can only play better than they did against Coppin State. If you had a hunch, do you think this team can actually challenge Arizona for a conference title this year?
Well, it'll depend on who's playing for the Wildcats with all this FBI stuff.
Yeah, that's true too.
Come down, but I think that's going to be in my mind, and I know a lot of people are probably more optimistic than mine. I see a team that doesn't have the size up front to compete with Arizona. You know, you look at Arizona. I'm not sure if you guys have watched or if people listening have watched, but they've got DeAndre Ayton, who's going to be a top five draft pick.
He is a freak of nature.
Absolutely, a total stud. He's kind of a bull, if you will, in this year's class in terms of his talent and skills. And he is very, very difficult. And I look at Oregon's roster, and they started Roman Sorkin at center last game. And I don't think that will be the case when they play Arizona in January for the first time. I don't think Sorkin will be starting. And it's worth mentioning he played great in the first game of the regular season. But I just kind of look around the roster and go, who guards that guy? You know, and I think that becomes an issue. And realistically, Arizona's probably a lot more talented this year than Oregon. But Dana Altman coach teams have always played better than their recruiting ranking. With that said, I just think Arizona might just be, this might be one of those years where they're just a little too good for Oregon.
Man, that was so much that we just covered. You can find him at Eric_Scopel on Twitter. Find his work at Duck Territory Online. Eric, it has been a pleasure talking some recruiting while Steve is gone. Thanks for letting us do that, man. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
Thanks, man. All right. So, yeah, I kind of tend to agree with him. You watch highlights of what Arizona did in their opener. That team, he's right. It's going to be interesting to see who ends up playing for them. But that team is really athletic and has size. And I actually share his sentiments completely. I mean, Roman Sorokin played really well for Oregon against Coppin State. He was, perfect from the outside, but if they don't have anybody who can defend guys in the middle, think about Oregon's team last year and a huge reason why they were a Final Four team. It's because of the way Jordan Bell improved defensively throughout the season and became literally a guy where if you try to go into the key, you're not going to be able to get a shot at the rim because he's going to send it back. And even after Chris Boucher played most of the season that way as well. And even after he left, Jordan Bell was just the rim protector. And I know people have talked about Wooten maybe being that guy for the Ducks this year, but I'm not sure. It's going to remain to be seen for sure.
I mean, Jordan Bell was literally the Pac-12 defensive player of the year. Like, your defense is going to go down when you lose a player like that to the NBA, who's doing a great job in the NBA, by the way, as well. But Altman said post-game when he was talking to Joey Mack, he's like, guys are going to soon start to realize that the way they get onto the floor is by playing defense. Yeah. We are looking for that guy that's going to be unselfish and do the dirty work, and that's how they're going to have to realize they're going to get on the floor is not by shooting and scoring, but by stopping the other team from doing it. And so that's going to be the next step, is Altman's always talking about this in every preseason or non-conference schedule. It's like, all right, we got to work on a defense, work on the defense, work on the defense. And it's just like, all right, who is that going to click with first?
Yeah. And he talked about kind of his rotation as well. Like, clearly he's figuring that out. I mean, we basically saw every player on the Ducks play against Coppin State. And he mentioned that at one time he had four freshmen on the floor at the same time, and that's definitely not going to be something he ends up doing regularly. So it's going to be interesting to see as this non-con, schedule goes on, what this Ducks team is going to end up as. And I'm really curious to see what they're able to do in that PK80 tournament, because they're going to face some legit competition up there, and it's going to be it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of respond to being in that situation.
Yeah, I was talking after the game with my friend's dad, who gave us tickets to go, and he was like, wow, this team's got a lot to put together. And I was like, yeah, they do. By the end of the month, they got a lot. And I was like, wait, the end of the month is in 2 weeks. The PK80 is next week. It's like 12 days away. Like, they've got a lot to work on to maybe even win like a preseason tournament. So.
By the way, is your friend's dad named Iceman? Or Icebox or whatever it is?
No, it is not. I don't believe
from
so.
From Top Gun? So he doesn't hang out with Goose.
No, he does not hang out with Goose.
Fair enough. All right, we are almost running out of time here. Still coming up on the show after this next break, we're going to bring you the Richter scale. Also still coming up, 4 o'clock hour, we're going to do Light 'Em Up. And I guess we'll talk about this Oregon basketball team and their game coming up with Prairie View A&M tonight. Again, this is Sports Talk with Steve Tannen with the B-minus team, Alex and Nick, here on 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 or email Steve at SteveTannen@live.com.
Keenum fades back, steps up, pumps, fires, threads the needle to Thielen, who rips it away from Josh Norman and collapses down. He's got a touchdown, and a team celebration of leapfrog is on as the Vikings leap ahead 20-17, 1:49 to go before halftime.
And I got to tell you, the leapfrog looked good till the O lineman got involved.
God, I love the NFL celebrations. I love that they're back. I saw one, I think it was from that game. I think it was Stephon Diggs did like the one of the few things you're not allowed to do anymore, where he caught the touchdown pass and then jumped on the goalpost and kind of hung on it like Spider-Man or whatever. You're not allowed to do that, apparently, and he got a penalty for it. That was kind of weird. Well, that was John Sadak and Mike Mayock on the call on Westwood One. Welcome back to Sports Talk with Steve Tannen, B-minus team, Alex and Nick sitting
C-plus.
In for him. He keeps saying C-plus, but I'll take,
B's and C's, get degrees.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm cool with either. By the way, Case Keenum kind of making a case for himself with Bridgewater back. Still not quite the franchise quarterback. You know, I guess who knows what Bridgewater is going to be, but he is playing amazing football right now for the Vikings. And all of a sudden you look up and they're 4-2 and they've won 5 in a row. So I don't think anybody saw that when this season kind of began and the whole, you know, the Adrian Peterson stuff was happening and, you know, Bridgewater still wasn't back, Sam Bradford, that whole thing. I think it's kind of, it shocked me to look up and see Minnesota at 7-2. All right. Without further ado, it is a Monday, the final segment of Crunch Time on a Monday. That means we do this.
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Sounds kind of good, doesn't it?
Other people want it. It must be good.
So it's bad. How bad?
Oh my God, that's the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
So I made this and it still makes me laugh.
I'm glad you find it funny. Every other time I think it's funny, and then I think it's really bad.
Yeah, so. Okay, that's fair.
This is the Richter Scale. The Richter Scale is brought to you by Ramsey Waite. Ramsey Waite has all of your leading brands under one roof, including John Deere, Polaris, Suzuki, Yamaha, and more. How the Richter Scale works is... is I bring up some of the biggest news from the weekend, and Alex will tell us how that news impacted
That's
the
me.
World of sports. That is you.
All right.
With the Ducks on a bye last week, there were 4 top 10 matchups with Georgia, Bama, Oklahoma, a renewed Notre Dame, the U game. It had to have been a great Saturday, right? Except really only the Bama-Mississippi State game ended up being close, with the Crimson Tide coming back to score 14 in the final about 7-ish minutes over the Bulldogs. How would you rate the top 10 matchups in college football this weekend?
I think you're looking at them all wrong, because I think the way it shook up college football is humongous. And I don't care. I love the Miami and Notre Dame game. That game is going to hold up for me for a long time. Notre Dame getting waxed like that by the U? Are you kidding me? I think, honestly, so, I mean, you can bring up all those terrible other games. The U and Notre Dame, like, is basically carrying them through a 9.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Speaking of
I loved watching college football last weekend.
I mean, it was fun. I just think I wish the games were a little bit closer.
All right, we'll say 8.5.
Okay. Speaking of college, it is officially the start of Gruden rumor season, a.k.a. Groomers. The spark that officially started Groomers was Butch Jones being fired from Tennessee, where Gruden was just a grad assistant in 86 and 87. How realistic is it for Gruden to end up at Tennessee?
Like a 3. Are we sure that he would actually be good at Tennessee? I mean, I know, I guess he coached there before. Like, he hasn't been coaching in a really long time, and he hasn't coached college. So what makes people think that he would actually be a really good college coach just because he's John Gruden? And by the way, he doesn't need money. He gets tons of money with ESPN. He's got one of the...
Can ESPN afford to keep him?
He's got one of the sweetest jobs in the world. I don't know why he would walk away from that. To coach college kids? No, that's a pass. I'd still say like a 3.
All right. Pac-12 this weekend was all chalk except for UW, as they were upset on a Friday night Pac-12 After Dark special. Bryce Love ran for 166 and 3 scores against one of the best run defenses in the Pac-12 in the country, with USC, Arizona, Wazoo, and UCLA coming away with wins as well. How do you rate Pac-12 play this weekend without the Ducks?
Interesting. I think it obviously didn't start off very well on Friday with Washington losing, because Washington was basically the Pac-12's best hope to get into the college football playoff. But yeah, I think the games were good. I'd say 7.
College basketball season has begun as well, and the top teams in the country are playing their quasi-exhibition games, including the Ducks, as they took on Coppin State from Baltimore, Maryland, and took them down 70-54. One of the few returning players from last year's Final Four team was Aaron Sorkin. He was the star of the opener, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 of 5 for 3 for the big man. Only the first game of a long season to come for the Ducks, but how do you rate the opening game performance in the 8th season under Dana Altman?
Oh, you like C+s. We're going to go C+. No. I would say about a 5. I mean, Oregon really played poorly in the second half. They didn't play good defense. I talked about it with Eric. They didn't play good defense. All of a sudden, everybody turned into chuckers, which, you know, you kind of expect that in the non-con, especially with a team that's, you know, full of really young players. Roman Sorkin is not going to lead this team in scoring throughout the season. He just isn't. I'd be surprised if he ends up, you know, a starter the whole season. That would just really shock me. This team is going to go through Troy Brown. It's going to go through Elijah Brown. It's going to go through Peyton Pritchard. And Wooten's going to, you know.
Wooten's going to score.
Wooten's going to score. McIntosh is going to score. That's going to be how this happens. It's just going to be kind of interesting to see how it gets to that point. So what was the actual question?
Just how do you rate the opening performance?
Yeah, like a 5.
All right.
Even keel.
The NFL was fantastic in the early slate. 7 of 8 games at one point were within one possession of going into the fourth quarter. 3 came down to the final minutes while the Jags and LA Clippers, Chargers, went into overtime as both teams were trying very hard to lose that game. The Browns went beyond full Browning it, and in the afternoon games, Adrian Claiborne had 6 sacks as the Falcons took down Jarrah Jones and the Zekeless Dallas Cowboys. How do you rate Week 10 of the NFL?
Week 10 of the NFL. Well, I know Mariota led the Titans to a comeback win. I think week 10
great
of the
drive in that game.
I think week 10 of the NFL was a lot of fun. I mean, you mentioned it, the Jags beat the Chargers in OT. I mean, the Lions beat the Browns. The Browns are the first team in back-to-back years to go 0-9 in NFL history. That's
wow.
That's impressive.
That's so Brownsy.
And hey, the Niners won, so 10. That's it. All right, so that is the Richter scale. That is crunch time for a Monday. On the other side, sports talk here at 95.3 The Score.
Hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City, online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Am I supposed to talk now? It's like false advertising, right? Here's Steve Tannen. I'm not Steve Tannen. Alex Braga sitting in.
Just wait for him to come back.
Alex Braga sitting in for Steve, along with Nick Rogers across the board from me. Steve flying back from New York, where he was visiting his family. I believe it was his mom's birthday. I'm not going to say a
it
number.
Was his mom's 80? Oh, yeah, that's right.
I don't know. No,
oh,
I don't
it
know.
Was. Oh, you don't. It was his mom's 80th birthday.
I didn't want to make a mistake. 80 is a good number, and that is definitely one worth flying back to the East Coast for. So again, yes, sports talk with Steve Tannen with the B minus team, Alex and Nick. Nick still says C plus. I disagree. I think we're better than that, frankly.
Wait till we do a second show, and then we'll start grading ourselves.
That's fair. Okay. Let's get into the second hour of us. Phone number 284-8571. That is the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you would like to talk to us, though, I don't imagine why anybody would. We're also on Twitter at 95.3thescore. If you want to contact us that way, we've actually had some good tweets today. And at Rick Nodgers, that's Nick, if you would like to tweet at him. Today's show brought to you in part by Coors Light, whatever your mountain climb on. So Oregon basketball, we're actually leading up to that tonight. Well, I guess kind of in an indirect way. So we're going to bring you sports talk until 4:30. And then the IMG Coaches Show with Willie Taggart is going to take over after that. And then that will give way at 5:30 for the pregame show for Oregon and Prairie View A&M, which I don't know a lot about Prairie View A&M. I know Oregon should beat Prairie View A&M and probably will beat Prairie View A&M. So I guess we're going to learn a lot about that tonight when the actual game comes on.
Where is Prairie View A&M?
I don't know. That's your job, Cracker Jack staff.
Oh, come on. I'm still Cracker Jack.
You're still
Steve
Cracker
leaves
Jack
and
staff.
I stay the same? That's not fair.
Well, it's just, no, you've added to your duties. It's just Cracker Jack staff is, you know, primary, one of those primary duties you have. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of want to talk about that win over Coppin State that the Ducks had, because, you know, Roman Sorkin led them in scoring. I mentioned this before. I mean, 23 points, did not miss, or he did miss, but basically, essentially could not miss from the outside. And, you know, if Roman Sorkin is going to lead the Ducks on offense this year, then I honestly think they're in trouble. And nothing against Sorkin, but he cannot create off the dribble. He is a big man who is a spot-up shooter. They need one of the Browns to step up. I mean, Troy Brown needs to step up. Elijah Brown needs to step up. And Elijah Brown really struggled against Coppin State. And you know, we talk about him being kind of one of the primary outside shooters along with Peyton Pritchard this year. I mean, Elijah Brown finished 2 for 10 from the field and 0 for 4 on threes. He's going to be better, and he needs to be better for this team to be good. And we really saw kind of flashes of it in that opener, the kind of guy that Troy Brown is going to be for this team. I mean, we actually see what a five-star recruit looks like when we look at Troy Brown. He's a guy who can shoot from the outside. He has size. He can take it inside. He's just one of those versatile players that don't really come around very often. So, you know, of course, it's early in his career, and he's going to need to, you know, figure out what kind of player he's going to be and, you know, actually get into the college game and become the star that he probably is going to be. But again, that we kind of saw flashes of that against Coppin State. Not really, you know, I think what he's going to end up being, I think, and which is going to be, you know, a big time score for this team. We just, you know, haven't seen it yet. Just small sample size, just the one game. So a lot of new faces for the Ducks, him kind of excluded, looked lost, which, you know, normal for openers, normal for the non-con. You kind of do well to remember Oregon's struggles to start last season. Kind of a big loss to Baylor, couldn't hit the broadside of the barn in Maui, had no rhythm offensively. Then all of a sudden, conference play hits, and they kind of turn it on. And then when they hit the tournament, they were obviously a big-time force.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the slow build is a lot better than coming out of the gates hot and just kind of tripping over yourself at the start of Pac-12 play. But I think one of the other big storylines to pay attention to or just on the court is who the backup point guard is going to be, because yeah. I noticed a lot when Pritchard was subbed out in that game, the offense just hit a brick wall, and there was not a lot of ball movement going on. There wasn't a lot of scoring. There was a lot of guys just hoping to find an open lane or chucking up threes late in the shot clock, like that kind of thing, because Pritchard is incredible as a sophomore, and what he did last year as a freshman is just fantastic as well. But the next guy up at that point guard spot, I think, is going to be probably the second biggest thing behind finding guys who can shut down on the inside for defense.
I'm kind of curious to see, you know, as the roles develop with this team, where Pritchard and Brown kind of end up. Because Brown has shown that he can play the point for this team. Obviously, he's a big point guard. And obviously, Pritchard has shown that he can play the point because he did it last year on a Final Four team.
Right.
And so which one of them is going to be obviously, they're going to both be on the floor at the same time most of the time. And so who's going to be the ball handler for them? And I guess, will it matter as the season goes on? Is Brown going to end up, you know, being the guy who just kind of like LeBron James, he'll bring the ball up the floor, everything will go through him, and then
Brown is LeBron James?
He'll score his, hot take already, right? Hot take for the 4 o'clock hour.
Wait, can we do the faux show now? Is this the faux show?
Oh, nice. No, LeBron James has college eligibility, and Dana Altman has offered him a scholarship, and he's coming back. Yeah, he's going to run the point for the Ducks. He's not going to worry about scoring, he's just going to run point, distribute like Pritchard did last year. I think that's going to be one of the things to kind of pay attention for, and maybe we'll see some of that tonight against Prairie View as well, is who ends up, you know, running point for the Ducks as the season goes on. Who's going to be the big men in the middle defensively? Nick alluded to that. Is it going to be McIntosh, grad transfer? Is it going to be Sorkin? Is it going to be Wooten? I mean, we've heard very good things about Wooten and very good things about McIntosh, but which one of those guys is actually going to, you know, step up and kind of be the rim protector that they had last year? I mean, obviously Oregon had the two best that they have ever had in the history of the school in Chris Boucher and Jordan Bell last year. So we're not even going to look for them to be at that level, but they need some sort of interior defense. And I'm curious to see which one of those guys it kind of ends up being. You know, and that could be figured out in the non-con too, or they just maybe don't have one of those kind of players on their roster this year.
Yeah, I would. My like dark horse, I think, is going to be Keith Smith. I think since he's a sophomore, his second year, like he didn't play a whole lot last year, yeah. But I think he's going to realize that what Altman wants to do is to have people who play defense, and when you play defense, he'll get out onto the floor more.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be my dark horse to end up being a perimeter or the shutdown guy down low. He's not the tallest; he's only 6'7", but I think Jordan Bell wasn't gigantic or whatever, and he was a huge force down low.
Yeah, and he kind of figured out his offensive game as his career went on as well. And Smith, just a sophomore, it'll be interesting to see if which one of those guys embraces that role, because you said it, Dana Altman said it, if you want to get on the floor with this team, you have to embrace a role. And whether that's going to be scoring like Troy Brown's going to do and Elijah Brown and Peyton Pritchard, I guess Roman Sorkin, who led them in scoring, or is it going to be a defender / rebounder / interior player? So it's going to be interesting to see, how that kind of evolves as the season goes on. All right, 284-8571. That is the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to talk some Ducks basketball. KUJZ 95.3 The Score has a great way for you to save money. Why pay full price when you can pay half? Just go to 95.3thescore.com, click on the Sweet Deals link, I believe it's on the upper right-hand corner, and you can save half price on local area businesses. And right now, that includes the Oregon Medical Training, so you can get some Oregon Medical Training for half price, and that is normally very expensive, but knock 50% off of that, as well as Oregon Coast Aquarium tickets. So if you the family want to hit up the aquarium, which is always a good time, hit up 953thescore.com and see the Sweet Deals link. Check out Sweet Deals today from KUJZ 95.3 The Score. So, of course, a lot won't be worked out for a while with the Oregon basketball team. There will be a lot of growing pains, but I wouldn't exactly say that win over Coppin State was a good win. They got outscored 40-28 in the second half, had some defensive lapses that led to open looks. Kind of tough to look beyond the 42-14 first half, but still, that kind of should be the way the game goes, not so much that 12-point deficit in the second half. And by the way, if you would like to watch a really exciting, fun basketball team, you really need to watch the Oregon women's basketball team this year, because they are incredible. They defend, they shoot, they run all game long. That is Kelly Graves' team this year. They have scored 91 and 110 points in their two
Whoa.
Games.
So
here's the deal with that. What's the deal?
What's the deal?
Thank you. I got to get one of those before we're done. the most they scored all of last season was 91 against San Jose State. The 110 is the most they put up since 122 in December of 2015 against Portland State. So last year they scored 91 against San Jose State. This year they've scored 91 and 110 already. That is nuts.
They're up to number 10 in the country too. The new AP poll just came out. So number 10 Oregon women's basketball team.
I don't know how long they're going to stay at 10. I'm definitely getting the sense that they're going to end up one of those top teams in the country by the time before too much time goes by. By the way, Sabrina Ionescu messed around, got a triple-double in their win over Drake yesterday. That Drake team, by the way, not bad. Won the MVC last season. This team, this Oregon women's basketball team, is just really, really fun to watch. So check them out if you're, obviously a lot of Duck basketball fans in this area. Women's team, get on the bandwagon before you get left behind, folks. And don't say that to Kelly Graves, because he welcome everybody on the bandwagon. But this really, really fun to watch. So that'll do it for the first segment here of Sports Talk here for the 4 o'clock hour. What you got, Nick?
I just a quick question: does Sabrina Ionescu break the NCAA triple double record by the end of 2017?
Ooh.
There's about 13 or 14 games left to play, depending on how they do in some preseason tournaments.
So she needs two to tie?
Two to tie, three to pass, three to tie, four to pass.
Or is that right? Okay, so I think she's one behind Nicole Powell right now for the Pac-12 record, I think it is. I think she does.
2017. All right.
Dude, we're two games in and she has one already. I guess the last game against Drake, she was getting yelled at from the sideline. Rebound, rebound, rebound. And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm killing them rebounding the ball. And they're like, no, they just wanted her to get the one more so she could get the triple-double and then they could take her out. That's good stuff. First segment of Sports Talk is a wrap. Coming up on the second segment, we're going to bring you Light 'Em Up. This is Sports Talk with Steve Tannen, brought to you by the B-minus team. Alex Braga and Nick Rogers here on 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 or email Steve at SteveTannen@live.com.
Down the floor, the Ducks into the right corner and too high, but saved in by Maite to Ayuso. Back to Maite. Open three. Yes! 46-17 Oregon.
He's got Keith Smith. Now he gives it back to Sorkin. Three-pointer. In! Sorkin's on fire. 16 points. Oregon leading 37-10. 16 for Sorkin. He's 5 of 6. That's a new career high.
Oh my, he's on fire.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. B-minus team sitting in for Steve today, Alex and Nick. Yeah, so a lot of really good basketball over the weekend, including the Ducks with some so-so basketball for the men, and the women's basketball team, very, very good. That was obviously Joey Mack and Terry Johns on the Oregon IMG Sports Network, which is actually we're just about to kick it over to as they're about to get the coaches show started at 4:30 with Willie Taggart, and then the Oregon basketball game against Prairie View A&M tonight at 5:30. The pregame show starts with the tip-off coming up at 6. Nick, you saw the Globetrotters, right? Did I hear that right?
I sure did.
How'd that go?
It was fun. It was a good show. My World All-Stars.
Did they lose?
They lost again.
Hey!
I thought tonight was the night.
It was the night.
I thought today was the day. You know, they came out hot. They hit a four-pointer to begin, but the Globetrotters, they do not miss from the four-point line, 30 feet away. That is, they got some range.
So what's the best part of a Globetrotters game? Is it the fact that they take those crazy shots and do like the fancy ball tricks, or is it the fact, or is it when they mess with people? Like when they mess with the official and when they like throw popcorn on fans in the first row.
See, I think that's really fun for like the kids that go, but yeah. I really enjoyed like them just being like, hey, let's take a 35 footer. Okay, why not? Oh, let me overhand it from the other 3-point line. Sure, why not? Let's, you know, do the 3-man weave for 5 minutes and then do 6 people like off the backboard for a dunk. Yeah, that's awesome.
The Rock and Jock basketball stuff. Are you too young for that? Did you ever watch Rock and Jock, the MTV sports things?
No, I didn't.
Oh my God, they were some of the best things ever. So, I mean, they would get celebrities and they would get athletes in, and they would essentially make them play games like that. So for basketball, they would do like a full court. They play full court, and then they have like a 10-point hoop that was just, you know, a billion feet higher than the actual 10-foot hoop. And, you know, you'd have to, or I think it was like 25 points. And so they'd shoot the ball in that, and they get extra points. And baseball, they'd have all these fun things you could like hit with the ball. And then they did a football one too. I can barely remember it. But
I remember the basketball where they had, it was all trampolines. And I think they were on like a 12 or 15 foot hoop, but you could like, everybody was like dunking all the time.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I forget what that was called. Yeah. It was like trampoline hoops.
Yeah.
And the whole,
it had a cooler name though.
Yeah. And they were really good at it and they trained at it, and it was really weird. That's a weird thing to do for a living is trampoline basketball, but a lot of people did it, I guess. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Time for one call before we get to Light 'Em Up. Let's bring in Michael. What's up, man?
Hey, man, I just want to drop a couple real hot takes while the grouch is out still.
Beow, 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 beow.
Super hot take. The
Do
Ducks
it.
Need Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly to Florida?
No, here, man. And the second super hot take, the Yankees suck. Out.
Rack him. by the way, Chip Kelly, apparently, according to reports today, getting vetted by Florida. And I saw a really good tweet earlier from Jeromny, and he did all of the vetting that Florida needed to do for Chip Kelly, and he literally went to his Wikipedia and took a screen cap of the four seasons he did at Oregon, and it was, hey, 10-3, Rose Bowl, 12-1, BCS National Championship Game, 12-2, Rose Bowl, 12-1, Fiesta Bowl. That's pretty good vetting, right? It's looking at the wins and losses, 46-7. 33.
Pay the man, Florida.
33-3 in conference. Yeah, I don't even know. I don't know why they're even waiting. Like, they should have just sent him a check right away. By the way, Tennessee should be doing the exact same thing. All right, let's get to it. It is something we like to do. It's normally the final segment of the 4 o'clock hour on a Monday, but let's get to it right now as we're coming up on the end of the show.
Again, Butter, Steph Curry, his 11th three of the night.
Kobe on a spin.
Yes!
What a display!
They can't believe it courtside, neither could we.
Airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
Oh my God.
How about another? To center field, number 4, Josh Hamilton. It's Lillard, he got the shot off. Win the series for the first time in 14 years!
Oh, man. It just gets you jazzed every time.
It's good. It's good. I don't know if I've heard anybody say Metallica gets them jazzed before.
Just now. This guy.
I'm going to run through a door, though. by the way, real quick, at @T_time podcast, Slam Ball, that's what it was called.
Nice. Yeah, Slam Ball was very cool. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Light 'em Up is brought to you by Hot Valley and their Light Me Up Lager. It is the perfect beverage for the big game. It is light, crisp, and refreshing, and easy to drink. It won't weigh you down like other beers can. Light Me Up Lager is brewed with minimal ingredients for that clean, fresh flavor. It is homegrown, brewed, and canned right here in Eugene's Whittaker neighborhood. Available on tap and in 16-ounce cans throughout Oregon in the Northwest. And how Light 'em Up works is Alex and I bring up the best performances of the weekend, and Steve, when he's here, he also does that. Who's going first?
Steve ain't here. I'll go first.
Okay.
I got Sabrina Ionescu.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy, Scott, because it's lit.
Man, I almost forgot the most important part. That would blasphemy. Sabrina Ionescu just named Pac-12 Player of the Week because she averaged in the first two games 22 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists. She shot 58% from the field.
Is that good?
That's good. Okay. She shot 64% from three-point range.
Is that good?
That's really, really good. She is going to end up, probably already is, the best player in the history of Oregon women's basketball. I mean, she's about to set the triple-doubles record for the conference. She's about to set the triple-doubles record for the nation, NCAA history, and she's not even 3 games into the second year of her career. And so I think it's suffice it to say that she's kind of living up to the billing as she came into Kelly Graves' program as the highest touted recruit in Oregon's history. I'd say she's living up to that. She had a really, really good first two games. Sabrina Ionescu.
It's lit!
All right. My first one is Adrian Claiborne of the Atlanta Falcons.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy.
Yes.
Scott! Because it's lit!
And he did it against Dallas, too, which is awesome.
Oh, so fantastic. All the drama going in between Jarrah Jones and the Don, Arthur Blank, no Zeke, and the Falcons trying to overcome that 28-3 Super Bowl lead, and just not really knowing how the game was going to work. And Adrian Claiborne steals the show of all people. 29-year-old D-end is in his third season in Atlanta. He only had 9 sacks as a Falcon coming into the game in all 3 years, and he goes and gets 6 on Prescott. He also gets, he beat 2 different Cowboys at left tackle. They had to bring in, they subbed the starter out, and then they subbed back out the starter and brought in the original guy again. They were trying to double team him. It just wasn't working. 2 forced fumbles, nearly got the defense 2 or 3 more had Prescott not escaped. But Adrian Claiborne, it's lit.
It's lit!
Yeah, can they buy a left tackle in Dallas? Actually, I think they've tried. They had 2 of them, and neither of them worked out.
They were pretty bad.
My next one is the San Francisco 49ers!
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy, Scott! Because it's lit.
And I'm not just going to say, like, everybody on the 49ers. Yes, absolutely. C.J. Beathard threw for 288, 19 of 25 for two scores. C.J. Beathard, who the hell is C.J. Beathard? Well, he's a 49ers quarterback, and he played really good against the Giants because they have a terrible defense. Carlos Hyde ran for 98 yards. The best story of that game, though, Marquise Goodwin,
oh, yeah,
the wide receiver. So he caught an 83-yard touchdown, and then his only catch of the game, and then kind of went down to his knees and like kind of went down to the ground, kind of his teammates came up and embraced him, and everybody's like, what the hell is going on? And then you find out that just literally hours before kickoff, he and his wife lost their first child in childbirth. And so not only does he play in the game, and then he goes out and catches a touchdown pass. It's just, you know, some things, I know it's weird, but some things in the universe happen for a reason. And everything coming together for him to score that touchdown, you know, he's really struggled this year for them, kind of dropping a lot of passes. And then he goes out and does that. It's just, it's fantastic stuff. So the 49ers win over the Giants.
It's lit!
Got time for one more for you? Do it real quick.
Real quick.
It's lit!
It is the Colorado State Boise City game. Colorado State was up 28-3. No one's ever blown that league, but they did it for the first time ever. And Boise City comes back to tie the game up at 52 after being down not only 28-3, but 35-10. 570 yards for Colorado, 641 for the Broncos, 33 first downs for each team. That game was fairly lit.
It's lit!
Boise City, because Boise is not a state. All right, that is going to do it for us. Thanks for listening, everybody. Our first time out of the gate, and I don't know, it went pretty okay, I guess.
I had fun.
B-minus team sitting in for Steve. That is it for us. That is it for Sports Talk today. We're going to make way for the IMG Coaches Show, followed up by Oregon Basketball. Pre-game show starts at 5:30, and the tip-off between Oregon and Prairie View A&M is at 6. Thanks for joining us. This is Sports Talk with Alex and Nick here on 95.3 The Score.